You're listening to Real Facts on Real Estate with Sean Patrick Maloney.
This sounds good.
Welcome to episode 29, Understanding 1031 Exchanges. I'm your host, Sean Patrick Maloney. I'm here today with Bill King, of Novellus Realty Advisors. Thanks for joining me, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
I look forward to telling our audience a little bit about what 1031 exchanges are and how they can work in their business. Let's start off with what is exactly a 1031 exchange?
Absolutely. So a 1031 exchange is an opportunity for real estate investors to defer capital gains tax that they would otherwise be forced to pay upon the sale of an asset like a multifamily property or even, you know, retail strip malls, really any real estate asset. You can defer those capital gains taxes through a 1031 exchange.
So on a 1031 exchange, would that also include single families being used as a rental property as well?
Any sort of investment property besides your main residence would be eligible to be used in a 1031 exchange. Anything from two family that you own as a small investment all the way up to, you know, 100 unit apartment buildings.
Excellent. So who qualifies for this type of transaction?
Really, any real estate investor can benefit from this type of transaction. The biggest thing that real estate investors want to avoid when they sell a property is paying 25 to 40% of any capital gains that they've amassed over the time period that they've held that asset to Uncle Sam. Through a 1031 exchange, you can essentially roll that new capital gains into the next property and defer that tax, essentially just kicking it down the road. And this process can repeat over and over again indefinitely.
Okay, so you keep mentioning the word tax deferment. What is tax deferment?
Absolutely. So tax deferment just refers to taking that tax bill that you'd otherwise be paying right now and deferring it to a later date. So by selling an asset, typically that's going to trigger the IRS coming to collect on the benefit that you've gained from the time that you've held that asset. Through the 1031 exchange, you purchase another asset and the IRS basically defers that capital gains tax until the time that you sell that next asset. By chaining together multiple 1031s over, you know, long periods of time, you're able to defer that basically indefinitely.
So with deferring it down the road and continuing to stack the tax, at what point do you actually do a 1031 exchange? So you have a property and you want to sell it, or is it at a certain number of years? When does it actually happen?
So timing-wise is flexible. You know, it can be something that you've recently purchased and just happen to find a, you know, another investor that makes a great offer on it. Typically with a 1031 exchange, there's dates which we have to hit in order to not trigger that tax payment. So what we have is a 45-day identification period. And what that means is you have 45 days from putting the property under agreement where you have to identify replacement properties. So typically, you're able to identify up to three properties that you think would be suitable replacements for the property that you're selling. And then you have 180 days from the sale of the property to close.
Okay, so if someone was to want to get into a 1031 exchange situation, the first step is they work with a person who can actually help them with a 1031 exchange and list the property for sale, and then during that time, they want to kind of identify properties that are like their property that they would like to exchange for?
Absolutely. It ends up being a little bit more complicated than that. You really need to have your team in place for a 1031 exchange. So key people to have on that team, a good broker that you trust that can sell the property that you're looking to sell, as well as help identify new properties to invest in. Another big key is just having, you know, a great CPA that understands real estate investing, you know, preferably has done these 1031 exchanges before. Unfortunately, you know, if you don't hit that identification clause, you know, you don't identify until 50 days or, you know, the property closes 185 days after the sale, you're going to be stuck with that tax bill. So it's, you know, a pretty high stakes game. You really need to have the team in place. The other piece that you need is what's called a qualified intermediary. So essentially, that's the person that holds the funds from your sale until you make the purchase of that next asset. What you don't want to happen is you don't want to take those funds in yourself, because if you do that, you would end up having to pay those taxes. You can no longer defer and go through the 1031. So again, it's just really important to have people in place and just make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed to make this process smooth.
So with a qualified intermediary, is that something Ellis Realty Advisors are currently?
So we ourselves don't act as qualified intermediaries. You know, we're in the brokerage business, so we assist clients with both the sale of their assets and identifying new properties. The qualified intermediaries are typically, you know, attorneys or banks that hold those funds essentially in escrow during the time period that we're identifying that next property and closing on it.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up for me. I was just trying to understand
Absolutely.
Where the two come in together. So there's obviously a lot of working parts. So I think you brought a great point to the table saying that you really want to get your team together before you run into one of these transactions so that you're ready to streamline it. Because 45 days, as we know in the real estate world, sounds like a long time, but it can fly right by.
Especially in this market.
Yeah, definitely. When you're looking for properties and you're just trying to find ones that qualify, are there certain qualifications to make a property a 1031 exchangeable property?
There's no real specifications that a property has to fall under. The biggest things with a 1031 are actually with the replacement property. So the replacement property has to be essentially the same property type, meaning that, you know, if you're selling a business, you can't generally 1031 exchange that into an investment real estate property. Generally, it has to be a what's called a like-kind asset. So real estate to real estate, a business to another business, things like that. The other big piece to it is that the replacement property has to be, you have to essentially be putting more or the same amount of equity into the purchase. And you also have to have either an equal amount of leverage or more from the property that you are replacing. So you essentially can't take, you know, if you're selling a $1 million asset and getting $500,000 in proceeds, you can't go and buy a $500,000 asset with all cash. You still need to have some form of leverage in that next deal.
Okay, that makes sense. Who do you find that are doing the most of these 1031 exchanges? Is this something that you think that more people should know about, or do you think that typically this is something more along the lines of an investor who's, you know, been in the business for a long time and used to doing this? Who do you find doing these transactions?
Really, everyone can benefit from, you know, a 1031 if done properly. Anytime you can defer taxes down the road, it's always going to be helpful. You know, for a mom and pop investor who maybe has a, you know, small portfolio of a couple properties, you know, essentially, if you do a 1031 correctly, you can defer those taxes until, you know, the time that you pass away and leave those to your heirs. And at that point, your heirs would get a step up in basis to whatever the fair market value of the property is at that time. So they wouldn't be on the hook to pay those capital gains taxes. And that's what you see a lot of it with, you know, families that have owned properties and passed them down over generations. If you're smart, you can really accumulate a lot of wealth like this and help to set up, you know, the next generations of your family without having to fork over a big check to Uncle Sam.
Could I rewind you just a tiny bit and just explain a little further what you meant on step up on basis as far as when the family member passes and you're going to be inheriting the properties?
Absolutely. So when we say a step up in basis, essentially what we mean is if you bought a property in, you know, 2000 for $100,000 and you sold it today for $500,000, you'd be taxed on the $400,000 of gain that that property has accumulated over that time. What a step up in basis means is through different tax avenues, you can end up having the basis, which is that $100,000 point, stepped up to a higher level. Typically, this happens upon passing of somebody. When they pass away and leave a property to somebody else, those properties are automatically stepped up to the fair market value. So instead of their heirs being hit with a property tax bill for the $400,000 of gains, you know, if they pass away and the fair market value of the property is $500,000, the heirs get the property at that value without any tax bill owed.
Wow. So that seems like a great benefit if you're at that point where you're a big property holder and you're later in life, then you really should be setting up 1031 exchanges for your properties.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, selling a property, especially later on in life, you know, if you need the cash and that's what has to happen, and then it makes sense. But, you know, if it's something where you're looking at passing this down and you're selling an asset, you know, if you can avoid paying those taxes, it can be a huge benefit to you and your family.
Yeah, in a world where we're at, where taxes are pretty much every time you turn around, it certainly makes a lot of sense to protect your money. I know a lot of people look at people who pay little taxes as evil people, but the reality is we have these rules and it is a game, and it's about playing your cards the way that they're dealt the best way you can and about keeping the most of your money possible. So this sounds like a great avenue for real estate investors to keep a lot more of what they're actually gaining.
Absolutely.
I know that obviously in the residential real estate brokerage that I run, a lot of people will hold off on selling properties based on the fact that they're concerned about their capital gains, and it is a huge hit.
And those are the biggest folks that I think would benefit from this podcast. Bigger institutional investors, you know, they understand these programs. They really have people that are on the payroll, and their sole job is working through the ins and outs and making sure that they're paying as little taxes as possible, and that they can find every loophole and every program that's out there. But for a mom and pop investor or people who are just getting started out, if you're going and get that first investment property and you sell it and don't do a 1031 exchange and have to fork over a check for, 30 to 40% of that gain, that can be really disheartening. Versus if you, set things up correctly and take the time to do this process properly, you keep that 40%, roll it into the next property, and, rinse and repeat over and over again, you can accumulate a lot of wealth that way.
That sounds good. So we have quite a few commercial brokers as well as residential brokers in the group, as well as mortgage people and everything. So how do you suggest somebody gets into the conversation to start off talking with somebody about a 1031? Like, how do you approach people during your process of working with buyers and sellers? Because obviously, the knowledge of this may actually spur off new transactions that were holding off because of the fact that they were nervous about the capital gains.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing is, getting broker that you know and trust to come in and give you a valuation on your property, a realistic opinion of what it would actually sell for in the market. From there you can look at, okay, what would be, the actual equity that I would be getting out of that sale. And you can start to identify, okay, are there replacement properties out there that make sense, that are more attractive than this? Another good opportunity for a 1031 exchange might be, if you've held onto a property for 15 or 20 years, paying off that mortgage, you have very little leverage left in that property. You can 1031 into something where you're a little bit more highly leveraged, juice up the returns that you're getting, better net operating income, and, get into something that's maybe a little bit more updated, go from a, maybe a four family to, a 10 unit apartment building, something like that. And essentially just be using the equity that you've already accumulated, as well as some additional leverage, to make that happen.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. I mean, I know a lot of people that own a lot of properties and actually could greatly benefit from this idea. So definitely be sharing it with different people that I have within my group of people that I know that are property investors. Mm-hmm. With the 1031 exchange, is there a certain date? I know you just mentioned as you further your way down through the mortgage and, you're losing your leverage there. Is there a certain point? Can you do a mortgage-free property, or is it has to have a mortgage on it in order to qualify for the program?
Nope. So you don't have to have leverage on it. Essentially, the rule is just that you have to bring the same amount or more leverage to the next property. So if you have $1 million property that you just flat out own and don't owe any money on it, you could still sell that property and, purchase a $2 million property with $1 million loan, to get yourself into something, bigger, a little bit more sophisticated.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I just, when I was hearing the loan, I was thinking maybe that you needed to have a loan, but it just says if you have leverage, you need to keep and maintain the same amount of leverage, if not more.
Exactly.
So are there other tax deferment programs? I think I've heard of one called an opportunity zone. Can you further explain those?
Yeah, absolutely. So opportunity zones are kind of one of the hot topics right now. Sort of an alternative that people look at compared to a 1031 exchange. Similar timing, so you have 180 days from the close of the property that you're selling. Basically, the whole idea behind the opportunity zones is that the goal is to get investment into some of the distressed areas of the United States. So Congress went through and basically had each state identify tracts of lands that are below a certain threshold of median household income. And for real estate investors, investing in those census tracts would yield a tax deferment similar to a 1031 exchange.
And how does somebody identify an opportunity zone, or is that something that they reach out to you to help find? Or
yeah, so opportunity zones investments are a little bit more complicated. They do have to happen through what's called a qualified fund. That can be as simple as one person setting up a fund to invest their money. It doesn't need to be, you know, a huge Wall Street entity investing the money, but it does have a little bit more to it than, you know, a 1031 where you're just identifying another property and investing directly in it. The biggest thing with the opportunity zones and why a lot of people are looking at it is rather than a 1031 exchange where you are essentially kicking that capital gains tax down the road, you never get a step up in basis on a 1031 until, you know, if you do pass away and leave a property to somebody else. With the opportunity zones, there are levels where, you know, if you hold onto a property for 5 years in an opportunity zone, you do get a step up in basis on that original amount that you brought to the table. So it's just something different, you know, for larger, a little bit more sophisticated investors. It's something that they can look at a 1031 versus an opportunity zone investment side by side and basically just decide which one makes the most sense for them from a tax perspective. But it's just another option that's out there. You know, we can walk people through what those look like. And again, it's something that you would really want to sit down with your CPA at the end of the day and compare, you know, apples to apples to figure out which opportunity is the best for you.
Yeah, I think that CPA can be a businessman's best friend or a businesswoman's best friend for sure.
Absolutely.
A good CPA is going to teach you how to keep more of what you have already coming in your own pocket and keep it out of the government coffers for sure.
That's what it's all about.
So are there any other tax deferment programs that are available, or is it pretty much these two that are the majority of what people are doing?
These are the two big ones that we deal with a lot. There's also another program. It's called the Delaware Statutory Trust. Similar to a 1031, essentially it's a 1031 where lots of investors are pooling money into typically larger Class A type properties. You're usually looking at like large scale apartment complexes, things like that. So it can be similar. It's treated similarly as far as the tax ramifications to a 1031 exchange, as far as, you know, deferring those taxes down the road. The downside is because you are investing in typically like very large, very stable assets, the returns are much lower than what we see on, you know, smaller, more local investment properties.
Excellent. I really appreciate all the knowledge you shared with me today. Thanks so much for joining me, Bill. If somebody was to look to get a hold of you, where would they go? And tell us a little bit about how they get in touch with you.
Absolutely. So all my contact information is on our website, which is ellisrealtyadvisors.com. My cell number and my email are on there. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to walk them through the process in a little bit more depth. And people have properties that they're curious. You know, we always get a lot of people who say, you know, I haven't had a valuation done in a couple of years, especially where we're this far into a cycle. Some of the numbers that these properties are trading for can be a little bit eye-popping. So, you know, love to talk with people and just give them an idea on what the market might be for what they have.
Well, thank you all for listening today. I appreciate you on the podcast. If you have any questions for Bill or myself, feel free to email me, DM me, DM me, whatever works best. Make sure to follow us on the podcast, and we will talk to you next week. Thank you.